I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, hello, hello, hello. Leavers and believers, welcome to Leaving Hillsong. My name's Tanya, and I'm so happy that you have decided to join us today. And it's some really important information. Some of you will be familiar with the Mercy Ministries, now Mercy Multiplied, scandal that happened in the late 2000s, if you're not tuned in. Britt and Sarah from our past previous weeks in Delusions of Reference and the Prosperity Lounge got together to share their experiences of going into the residential rehab program for young women in trouble. And it's some pretty harrowing stuff. Trigger warnings all around. There's talk of suicidal ideations and abuse, violence, eating disorders, mental health struggles that plague so many people. But apart from that, it's a really important and interesting look into what actually took place under the hallowed halls of mercy, where there really wasn't much at all. So stick around, grab those snacks. Nancy would hate that. And settle in for part one of Into the House.
So, Britt and Sarah, very, very, very grateful to have you both here at the same time. Thank you for your time. And as we were chatting, we were just talking before, I said, are there any kind of massive trigger points? And all you could come up with was Brooke Fraser. Tell me about that. Let's start there.
I think it's just the first couple of chords of a song that they used, and they meaning Mercy and Hillsong to pump the program.
Fruit.
And it's yeah. It's, as soon as you hear those first couple of chords of this particular song, it's all on.
But what song is that?
Lifeline by Brooke Fraser.
And I wonder what the kickbacks were there. So, all right, we have met you before on the previous episodes, and you guys are together at the moment because you went through the program together. Can you tell us, for those of us, or for people who haven't heard about Mercy Ministries, which was, I mean, you tell me, it from my memory at the time, it was directly sponsored by Hillsong. Darlene and her husband had brought it out, and it was a program for girls in trouble, which originally was unplanned.
So
pregnancies.
Do you remember the blurb? It was Mercy Ministries is a residential treatment program for girls between 16 and 29 who struggled with life-controlling issues such as eating disorders, unplanned pregnancy, blah, 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 blah. It just depends how far back in time you go and how American you go with it, like lesbianism. So it's just like...
Yep. That anything was on one of the original application forms. So Mercy Ministries was started when? By
1983 by Nancy Alcorn. Originally, and this isn't widely known, it was called Covenant House Ministries. And I actually know people who were there in that time. I think the very, very original home was in Monroe, and it is a different place than it is now, before she kind of started like Mercy Ministries, the Mercy, I think Nashville, but the Monroe home was, originally it was called Covenant Ministries, but that's not widely known. And so it started out very girls with unplanned or unwed mothers. And then, so, you know, if you were an unwed mother or you had an unplanned pregnancy, you'd go there and live there for some undetermined amount of time. It could be up to a few years at that time. And then work out, you know, if you wanted to adopt your baby out or give birth to your baby. It was supposed to be, you know, this alternative to abortion, because we don't do abortions. That's a whole other topic I would love to get into.
Oh, yeah.
The whole adoption scheme.
Yeah,
to totally. Friends.
We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get to the trafficking stuff one day. And then it basically grew to girls with eating disorders. And then it kind of expanded from there as like this one-size-fits-all girls with drug and alcohol problems. I think in America it was from the age of 13 to 29. And so it just expanded from there. And I think by the time it came to Australia, it was that like one-size-fits-all under the umbrella of life-controlling issues. Yeah, so by the time it came here, I think they had two or three homes open in the States. And then we were the first international...
Okay. Yeah. And Nancy Alcorn is she used to be, well, I mean, what's her qualifications? I know she was a gym teacher at a juvenile correctional center for girls. That's one big red rainbow flag there. And then
it's in her books, but I think I don't know if she had studied social science or social work or something, but I know she was a social worker for a while, so like CPS kind of worker and going to houses and you know, taking kids or whatever. I know she did that for a while, and then when she was trying to start a home, I think she started trying to network with like local political figures in the area and stuff, and tried to kind of sell the idea. And she said our whole thing is that we don't take government funding, because then that restricts what we can do and what we want to do. So she had this, like, that was one of, I think, the three underlying principles of what she was trying to do, because I think what she was trying to do was also like it was a religious program. So she's had this whole thing about not taking government funding. Do you remember what else, Britt?
I think her biggest qualification was just her calling from God, which she decided to push in all of her topics, like in all of her sermons or when she spoke. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I didn't realize they were still kind of that limited when they came to Australia. So whack us on the map, please, you two. How did each of you end up going? I mean, as comfortable as you... like as much as you are comfortable to talk about, you know, give us the intro into you guys meeting each other at Mercy. What, you know, life controlling issues, what made it an appealing program for what you were going through?
Well, I'm just trying to compress this information because it's just a bit, I could talk too much.
Go for your life. And I'm sorry if I'm asking the right questions, or do you know?
No, it's all right. So I came to be a Mercy. So me and Britt did not know each other before Mercy. I came to be a Mercy in mid-2005. I had, as per previous podcast, I didn't grow up in the church or Hillsong or anything, but I came to be at Hillsong in about 2002. And I was there, and I was like the troubled guy. I had like pretty bad depression, and later in life was diagnosed bipolar. And I think just I was quite trauma affected from different things in my life, that some of them were quite recent at that point. But I'd say, look, it's just mainly like massive depression. And I think I just liked the idea. And I think this is the whole Christian thing they try to sell to you, that, you know, you can pray and you can get healing and all this stuff. And so I was like, oh, if I go here, maybe I'll get healed of depression. But I just liked the idea that I didn't have to have this anymore, and that it could be a choice, and that it could be all I've got to do is heal or something. So, and it's just trying to live up to that testimony expectation as well. You think, oh, like these people, they come from this, and they're like, I don't need medication anymore, and I'm like this, praise God, amen. I was like, I think that was the aspiring thing to be. And these girls, and that was certainly consistent in the testimonies that came out of Mercy. And because Mercy was like advertised a lot in the church news, and, you know, oh, today we're donating to Mercy. And so, yeah, it kind of came to my attention at Hillsong, and I decided to apply with the support from one of the pastors from Pastoral Care. So I applied to go, and I got in. Yeah.
I guess my story is kind of similar. Like, it was just kind of, again, kind of in the earlier podcast that we did, like I was very, very young. I think I was 15 when I applied, and it just stemmed from just your usual generic adolescent depression. There are a couple of things like growing up that I guess probably contributed. And the program was suggested to me through the principal of my high school, actually. His daughter was a graduate of Mercy Ministries. And it was kind of suggested when I was in year 9 or year 10. So again, like 15, 16, it was, there's this place and it's great and it's church supported, Bible based, which, as per previous podcast, that was kind of like how I grew up. So it really appealed. And yeah, so went through the application process, got told that I would have to wait until I at least turned 16. And yeah, then ended up leaving school essentially for the purposes of going to Mercy after year 10. I think Sarah and I were just in the program maybe 2 or 3 months together, out of both, like at the end of Sarah's stay and the start of my stay.
And I mean, how did you meet? Like, how did, what happens when you arrive? Like, I don't know. How old are you at that point, Sarah?
I was 22 when I went into the program.
And you saw this 16-year-old girl and thought, what?
I don't know.
Like, it's pretty heavy.
It's pretty heavy
at 15 to kind of think you need a live-in residential rehabilitation program.
At the time, everything is normalized. At the time, it's like, oh, it's great. Yep. You know, you're getting help so young, and then you can live the rest of your life, like, you know, healed and shit. It wasn't really, I think everything was normalized. Everything. It's like a 16-year-old in a program. Just thinking, oh, it's a God thing, and, you know, the people that get into this program, you know, they put here by God, because we're always told, you know, you're placed here by God and all that. So you just think, oh, cool. Even when it's shit, you're told, you know, like, I think you just like, oh, it's people who are here are meant to be here.
The other thing as well, you're told very, very early on, like essentially as soon as you walk in the doors and they're going through all your stuff, like they do it like in a psych ward, making sure you didn't bring any contraband in or anything like that, which is really interesting because none of them are qualified, which I'm sure we'll touch on. But they make it very, very known that you are not to talk about your issues with any other applicant or like resident within the house. So other than, unless you came in emaciated or visibly pregnant,
scars or something, yeah,
you don't really know what other people's issues are.
Why is that? I mean, do you think that they, what was the reason given anyway for why you can't talk amongst yourselves? And what do you think now in hindsight? Like, how does that?
I think psychologically it was a tool to isolate you, to make you rely on the program that they are the only ones that can heal you. Because if you start talking about your issues with other residents in the program, you may pick up either coping strategies or actual strategies that other people may have picked up from psychological services or whatever before they came into Mercy. So restricting what you can say to other girls in the program forces you to rely on the staff. I don't know. Sarah?
Yeah, I think it was part of that because I remember you weren't allowed to talk to other girls. Like if you had some run-in with the staff or some criticism of the program, you weren't allowed to talk to other girls. You had to go to staff. And if you wanted a hug, you had to go to staff and ask for a hug. Like you weren't allowed to touch each other or hug or do any have any kind of physical touching or anything. Yeah, I think it was part of the wider thing of, you know, that's being not allowed to talk about things like they can, which I think like later, I think after Mercy, I realized how much it affected me. Like, it's like, I didn't feel like I owned my own story. Like I kind of did the Mercy testimony at the end and, you know, you got to kind of tell a certain way and follow the, you know, rule. And, but I just feel like I didn't own my story anymore and I had to sign a contract saying I couldn't tell my story. And it's like, it just kind of takes your voice. Yeah.
You sign a contract when?
When you graduate, because they say there's an optional contract, but when you opt to not sign it, they say it's not really optional, it's compulsory, and if you don't sign it, we'll consider not graduating you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just say you won't tell your story where?
So my contract said, like, because they say, oh, you can't, when you leave, you're not allowed to drink for a year, you can't gamble for a year. They just put all the stuff in. You can't date for a year, you can't tell your story or your testimony, you can't serve a church for this long. And it was weird because there was a team I was serving in that I was quite happy. I was serving a team before I went there, and when I went back and I was interested, and the pastor even approached me and said, hey, do you want to come join a team again? And I was interested, but I had to check with Mercy and they said no. So it's like, okay. So wow. I got put with some stupid other team. It wasn't really my thing.
They kind of own you afterwards as well. All right, let's go back a bit. So I mean, and this is the core of Mercy is that you were promised professional help. I mean, that holistic, was.
Yeah, with qualified professionals, with a holistic approach.
Yes, exactly.
And a Bible-based program.
Yeah,
Bible, but we're talking, you know, trained psychologists and counselors and.
Dietitians, psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers. Yes.
GPs, etc. In reality, you had Bible college students dishing out medication.
Well.
Hillsong College Bible students dishing out medication that could range from anything from a Panadol, which you had to sign for, to some of the strongest antipsychotics. The GP that you went to, so the doctor that we'd go to if we were sick or we needed a prescription refill was the Hillsong doctor. So the Hillsong had like a GP.
Hillsong Image Center.
Yep. And that was the only doctor that we went to, unless it was an emergency. But if it was an emergency, you had to, when you went to the GP, the local one, a staff member would accompany you into the actual session. So even things that you said to the doctor were monitored. Yeah.
I will just add to what Brit has said, just with the Hillsong doctor, the GP visits. They were supervised. You had to have a staff member present. So I felt that was quite coercive. You had to have a staff member, a Mercy staff member present in the appointment. You couldn't see the doctor alone.
No privacy at all. Okay.
No. Yeah, but there were no psychologists, psychiatrists. There was absolutely no one that was qualified.
Okay. So, I mean, take us through like a typical day/week of Mercy. What is this program that...
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You graduated from, Sarah. Tell us how, like, you know what I mean? Like, what are the hoops you have to jump through?
Yeah, so a day in the life, well, it was very, very structured. It was very, you know, you wake up at this time and there's a shower roster, so there's three times a day. I think they did the schedule every fortnight or something, and, you know, your shower time would change or this would change. Every now and then, out of nowhere, your room would change and your roommates, they just up and decide that everyone was going to move rooms. You had a laundry roster. You had 15 minutes in the shower. You had to make your bed, like, I think, like, within the first 20 minutes, you had to make your bed with the perfect corners and everything. You can't have dust on your side table. They might come and check for dust and give you some kind of infraction for that. You had, yeah, you'd had rosters for everything. You had to make sure you remembered your medication, because if you didn't and the staff forgot, then you would get punished. What else? It was very Bible-y. It's like, okay, so for this time in the morning, we're going to read the Bible. Or you got to walk around the, do laps on the driveway doing your godly beliefs, which is the word of faith. You got to read out like these pronouncements from God's Creative Power booklet. The girl, if you've eaten breakfast and you're there for an eating disorder, then you have to go into the library and sit for 20 minutes and read your Bible. Yeah, so then there would be class, and it was just very classy, and you'd basically watch a sermon. It was usually Joyce Meyer. Sometimes it was someone else. You're doing between, in your breaks, you're doing counseling homework, which is basically just a tape series. And it might not be homework, it might be a punishment that you got or a discipline. So they just punish you with more Bible and sermons. So, yeah, what else? What am I missing?
I think with a lot of, going back to, like, even stuff as basic as the shower and the laundry roster and the rooms, like, if the staff felt you were getting too comfortable, either in the program or with other residents, like, that would trigger a change. So even if you'd mentioned, like, oh, I really like having an afternoon shower, the next fortnight you'd find you're on a morning shower, and the reasoning would be, well, you got too comfortable, we need to break that cycle so that you're not comfortable and you can learn to kind of deal with challenges when they come your way, such as an afternoon shower. Yeah, and then we'd have like rec, so recreation, which would be either running up and down the driveway, or there was a pool that we were rarely ever allowed to use. I think in the whole year that I was there, we maybe used it three times.
Were you both in the Sydney house?
Correct. Yeah.
That one out in Dural, I think, and it had
Glenhaven.
Very high walls.
Big gates at the front, and it was quite isolated. Like, it was that whole area, like, when you get kind of out, it gets a little bit bushy, and it's, yeah. So we did have girls there, like, there are a few during my time. I'm not sure, like, Sarah, I'm sure there were some in your time that tried to get out.
Yeah.
And they would be found, because it was such a long walk anywhere from the house to any kind of shopping facility or police or anything like that. Yeah, but they were quickly brought back in one of the staff members' cars, and then you probably wouldn't see them again. They would be either locked in their room or locked in the staff quarters then sent home.
And we weren't allowed to talk about them or the fact that they were there.
Yeah.
Or how they came to leave. We weren't allowed to talk about that either. If someone left, we weren't allowed to talk about it.
If someone had...
Very 1984.
Yeah. If someone had like a significant issue, like either some kind of psychotic episode or literally just like a tantrum, the rest of the residents in the house were moved to an area where we couldn't see what was going on. So, and then, yeah, there would be very strict rules about like talking about what happened or, yeah. I remember one specific instance. There was a girl who I shared a room with who, I'm not sure of the backstory, like in terms of her medication, but she started having seizures, and they were quite scary because they could happen at any time of the day, and it was just her and I sharing a room. And I was taught, like, it was told to me that we've got to pray for this girl, like it's more of a demonic thing. It's not an epileptic seizure, which it was. And they waited probably a good 2 or 3 weeks before they actually got her any kind of medical. So that was there was a lot of things, like, I remember, and keep in mind, like, I was still only like 16 or whatever. And that thought process of I've brought something into the house that has triggered this demonic response for my roommate. So my room got checked and like all my drawers got checked. Had I brought anything into the house from leave that wasn't supposed to be there, that's kind of brought in this presence that's making someone sick? It got quite interesting.
Interesting. I mean, how does that make you feel at the time you're 16 years old and you're getting blamed for powers and principalities that you don't know? Like, what?
I think that was kind of like, that was the basis for a lot of things that happened in the house. Like when there was like maybe a string of dismissals, like say three or four girls got dismissed all around the same time, it was that there was a presence in the house. There was something that God didn't want in the house. Yeah, I'm not sure. Sarah?
Yeah, it was weird. I remember that too. It was just very like, and then there'd be like these, I feel like the control thing would ramp up as well. It's like, you know, strictly not allowed to talk about it. And I think the whole thing, I do feel like it was made, like girls were made an example of as well, because it's quite traumatic. Like if someone was being dismissed, they'd be maybe like locked into the, there's like a staff, one of the staff offices and stuff, and they weren't allowed to go out and you could hear them crying. Like, and they'd be taken to the airport the next day. And you're like, because I think the whole thing that's drummed into you there, you're told God has placed you there. This is, and the whole Mercy testimony is like, I went to Mercy, it was my last and only chance at freedom and none of the secular treatment could help me. But now I've got this and Mercy has God and now I'm like, so if you feel like you have that up, then you feel like you have nothing left, like nothing. Wow. Because it makes you so dependent on them and you're like, oh, the secular treatment and the psychotropic medication and all that, no, there's nothing that can help me. It was Mercy was supposed to help me and now I've stuffed up, like, and you blame yourself and you think, wow, there's nothing. You walking out of there, you feel like you're walking, it's like the, what are they, like point in the bone, like it's like, yep, you think you're cursed. Yep. Like this is, what else is there, like I'm just gonna go and die somewhere, like there's nothing, there's no hope, because you feel like you've stuffed something up, that God's will was for you to be there and now you've somehow stuffed up and you've stepped outside of his will and his grace and his favor and you've gone against the staff who are God's authority over you there. It's just weird. It becomes harder and harder and harder to differentiate between God and staff because they become one and the same. And that was my experience anyway.
That starts as well from like within the application process, depending on kind of the level of issues, or obviously pregnancy, they don't really have that much time to keep you on a waiting list. Some girls could be on a waiting list for a year, like over a year or whatever. But during that time, they start to indoctrinate you into the thinking of Mercy. So you're sent books, you're sent tape series, and in those books and tape series, it does start to instill that belief into you that Mercy are the only people that can help you. Like all these stories about girls in America and around the world that Nancy has helped and the program has helped and this is the only way. And if you fail, as Sarah said, you've stepped outside of God's will and like there's pretty much nothing left for you. You're done. So having that even before you step foot into the program, for somebody that is already incredibly vulnerable, no matter what issue that you're facing, like it's hard. And then you get there and it's 24/7 and it's fed to you, either through staff or through the lessons or through the counseling sessions or the tape series. Like it's just, yeah, you start to believe it if you haven't already believed it before you step foot in the door.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of 2007, I got some emails from a couple of young women that had been through the program, and to this day, I have not encountered people who have been so, like, profoundly disturbed by the, professionally or personally, the Mercy Ministries issue is close to me because it was so incredible. There were multiple emails, multiple aliases, just complete terror with these women because they believed they had been told they were responsible for various demonic happenings in the house. And that
you know, this absolute terror that the founders would turn up on their doorstep if they spoke out, that something terrible would happen. I mean, it was almost how much different was it to a kidnapping situation where, you know, they'd been told if they ever said anything bad, you know, there would be some terrible penance to pay. And I mean, funnily enough, because we're going to talk about how Hillsong, what's the word, detached itself from Mercy Ministries when things got unpleasant. But these women were in particularly were worried about the Gloria Jean's coffee people turning up, because Gloria Jean's was run by, at the time, a coffee franchise run by Nabi Saleh, who was one of Brian Houston's besties and was on the Hillsong board, and a guy called Peter Irvine, who was a businessman. I mean, he was a Hillsong guy. I don't know if he was bored. And they were, you know, really worried that these guys would turn up because Gloria Jean's, this, you know, it's funny, they did a lot of searches. Some of the financial publications did some searches and they couldn't find any links between Gloria Jean's and Hillsong on paper. But if ever you went to a Hillsong conference, there'd be five. Gloria Jean's stands out the front. So, you know, did you have experiences with Gloria Jean's and Mercy while you were there, or did that sort of come later?
So I mean, Gloria Jean's, when Peter Irvine stepped in as one of the directors, that was kind of after they did all the damage control, that was after my time. But the Gloria Jean's relationship, I do remember there'd be, from time to time, there'd be a busload of guys that would, they were like from the Gloria Jean's and their parent company, I think, from around the world, and they'd come in and do bus tours and show them around the place to try to get them on board to, like, you know, this is what we do and we donate to this place, and kind of get them on board somehow. I remember there would be occasional, because like Gloria Jean's would do little fundraiser things for Mercy. They always had the Mercy Ministries box, donation box at the counter, so they were very invested. Like, I don't fully understand the ties between, like, the financial and business ties between Hillsong and Gloria Jean's, but they, every single sign points to there being one. Yeah, but I do know, like, I mean, for example, with the Mercy entity, and because there were directors of Gloria Jean's on, you know, like Peter Irvine being a former director, and then there were former directors, you know, like you got like Mark Check, Darlene Check, Stephen Crouch, Alfredo Guglielmucci, Pamela Duncan, Tony Guattari. There's all these people, like, here we go, Peter Robert Irvine, David Green, Sam Carr, Nick Kane. It goes on and on and on. Margaret Stunt. They're all directors of Mercy at one time or another. And you know their names. And there's like the former secretaries as well. And then I remember the board meetings, all these like senior people or Hillsong elders would turn up for the whatever they were periodic board meetings. They'd go into the library and we weren't allowed to talk to them. And they'd be doing their like board meeting in there. So it's like you can't. You know, there's these connections. You don't know exactly what they are from, like, the business or financial. You don't know who's getting kickbacks from who, but there's something, very much a tie between all of this. Like, I don't know if maybe Mercy was their, like, laundering vehicle. I don't know. I mean, because, you know, businesses get kickbacks from, like, charity donations. I don't really know. I can only speculate. But, I mean, you can't deny the business. You can't deny. I mean, if that's just the directors of the Mercy entity, and then there's the whole connection, you know, like how it kind of started here in Nancy. Nancy, you know, used to speak at Hillsong Conference, and they were part of the whole Hillsong Women's Sisterhood thing. Like, they'd preach at each other's churches and spruik each other's books and all of that. Like, it's just one really big incestuous family at that time. And I would say 80%, easily 80% of the staff, the operational staff, were Hillsong College students or people who went to Hillsong. Certainly the corporate staff were, you know, Darlene, Mark. It was very, very, very Hillsong-y.
Very, very, very Hillsong. Indeed it was, as much as they distanced themselves when things weren't as wonderful. It's just an incredible story, what was
allowed to go on, and then sort of swept neatly under the closest carpet. Really appreciate their time, and part two will be with you as soon as possible. I had COVID last week, which kind of delayed things, and very 2020 of me, I know. But onwards and upwards, as they say. Huge thank you to you for your time, tuning in, listening to us, and learning the stories of the brave survivors of Mercy Ministries and all kinds of other Hillsong-related ventures. Thank you for your messages, your supports, your likes, your shares. I think these episodes on mental health will be really, really useful. So pass them along to somebody that you've been thinking of while you've been listening to it. Huge thank you to my Patreons. Do not shy away from being one of those. The support is hugely welcomed. There's also PayPal and various other ways of finding us here at Leaving Hillsong. So until we talk next time, make sure you are kind to yourself. These are some pretty tough stories to get through. So, you know, if you're feeling it, go easy on yourself and go easy on the person next to you. Just don't know where they might have come from. I've just stepped out of Mercy Ministries. Keep leaving Hillsong, and we'll talk soon. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.